hundreds of retired U.S. military officials, including scores of generals and admirals, have been getting paid to offer their expertise to foreign governments, including countries with terrible human rights records, including Saudi Arabia. The Washington Post's investigation raises big questions about government oversight, accountability, and ethics of retired military officials. Craig Whitlock is the investigative reporter who led the project for the Post, and he joins us now. Craig, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks for having me.
So, Craig, retired generals or government officials working for foreign governments is not new, but you guys spent 2 years in court, and your in-depth investigation sort of uncovers the extent to which former military officials, both senior and lower rank, are now serving foreign military machines. Tell us what you found.
We found that since 2015, more than 500 retired U.S. military personnel have taken jobs or accepted gifts from foreign governments. Under a little-known clause in the Constitution, the Emoluments Clause, even if you're a retired military person, meaning you've served 20 years in uniform, you still have to apply for permission from the Pentagon and State Department before you can take any money, any jobs, any gifts from any foreign power. We went and we got all their applications dating to 2015, and this was the first time we were able to get our arms around the extent of it.
Craig, many of these retired top brass have done work for Saudi Arabia, which has an egregious human rights record. You report also President Trump's former defense secretary and General Jim Mattis has done a lot of work for the United Arab Emirates, and retired four-star General Keith Alexander, who also served as director of the National Security Agency, took a job with the Saudis just weeks after dissident and Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi was assassinated by Saudi agents. Tell us about General Alexander's work, and to what extent did human rights concerns really matter to these former senior officials?
Well, that's a good question, and it certainly didn't matter that much because a number of them had the opportunity to either not take the job to begin with or certainly to withdraw their work after Jamal Khashoggi was killed. With General Alexander, they announced an opportunity for him and his company called IronNet Cybersecurity to consult with the Saudis for a new cyber college called, coincidentally, the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman College of Cybersecurity. This was announced in July 2018, shortly before Khashoggi was killed. But then the State Department actually approved the paperwork, gave General Alexander the go-ahead about 2 months after Khashoggi was assassinated. So on one hand, it's sort of odd because you have the State Department saying this is okay, despite the U.S. government at the time expressing, you know, real concern, grave concern about what happened to Khashoggi, but giving the green light to General Alexander to continue his work. And his company continued to work for the Saudis for two more years.
But in addition to human rights, Craig, I mean, were any issues raised that, you know, a high level, you know, cyber security warfare training college for the Saudis could end up backfiring and harming U.S. national security?
No, and that's clearly a real problem with the system here is that we found these applications were really rubber stamped, that more than 95% of these requests were approved.
So these guardrails in place are really a rubber stamp when they're applying for them. But it's also, is there monitoring after the fact? Is anyone at Pentagon or State really sort of monitoring what these retired military personnel, many of them senior, what they're doing?
No, absolutely not. We found no evidence of that. And in fact, people have to report this effectively on the honor system. If people don't bother to apply, the Pentagon or the State Department don't track them down, or it's very rare. We only found fewer than five cases in recent years where somebody was actually penalized after the fact for not applying or not following the rules. In terms of national security, that is sort of a glaring loophole in all of this, that people are, of course, obliged to keep any obligations they have for security clearances, not to, you know, divulge any unauthorized secrets to foreign governments. But there's no monitoring. Nobody's following up to figure out, oh, what are you doing now for the Saudis? Or are you doing something different? Or are you consulting on a different program? There's no indication that there's any monitoring like that at all.
This is really an astonishing and troubling loophole. We're talking about a national security honor system with foreign governments?
Well, we are. And I think the approach has been that, you know, once you're no longer on active duty, that, you know, you're allowed to earn your living as you see fit. We sort of have a system of free enterprise. It is supposed to be different under the law, because retired U.S. military personnel can always be called back to active duty. And some of these people do, in fact, come back to government service again at some point. And this is something in their background that really doesn't get analyzed very much. Did they have any loyalties, financial or otherwise, to foreign governments that could continue to influence them in their work for the United States?
Let's talk about another country in your investigation, the United Arab Emirates, or the UAE. This is a tiny and very wealthy Gulf nation that for the past decade has been one of the world's biggest buyers of U.S. arms and military equipment. They've created a kind of mercenary army, and as you report, the UAE has also hired hundreds of former U.S. military officials to help build, you know, a strong military that's really now punching above its weight in the region. Describe what you found with the UAE and what the outcome is.
What we found is that the UAE has hired more retired U.S. military personnel than any other country in the world by far, more than 280 since 2015. And that probably understates it. This only counts veterans who served at least 20 years in uniform. There are many others who served less time in uniform who are working as contractors there. They really do everything for the Emiratis. They serve as helicopter mechanics, drone pilots, strategic consultants, people who maintain airplanes, you name it. They rely on Americans to do it. Now, it's important to distinguish these are not people working in uniform for the UAE. These are American contractors working on the private side of things. But in essence, they're doing very similar jobs to what they did for the United States military, just for a foreign country.
Well, and as you note, the UAE has recently intervened in regional conflicts, sending troops to Libya and Yemen. And you quote a national security expert as saying, look, the Emiratis have gathered a huge regional influence and have used that to, in some cases, undermine U.S. foreign policy. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's right. So on one hand, the UAE, its armed forces have actually become the most capable army in the Arab world, which isn't saying that much because a lot of the other Arab armies are relatively weak. But as you point out, the UAE leadership has used this to bad effect in a lot of ways. They helped intervene in the civil war in Yemen along with Saudi Arabia and really poured gasoline on a fire there. That's been one of the worst humanitarian crises in the world. The UAE military has also intervened in Libya, which is, of course, thousands of miles away. And that's another long-running civil war that the world's had trouble stabilizing. So in both of these cases, the U.S. government has been unhappy about the role played by the Emiratis. But yet there are hundreds of retired U.S. military people enabling the Emiratis to do this sort of thing by working for them as contractors.
Craig, most of these former military officials are not breaking the law, but it certainly raises ethical, moral, and national security concerns. In regards to the UAE, though, there were a couple cases where former officials seem to be breaking the rules. What's been the reaction, Craig, to your series so far?
In the UAE, one person we wrote about is a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, a guy named Steve Toumajian. He retired from the U.S. Army more than a decade ago. He went to the United Arab Emirates, and they actually made him a major general and gave him a title as His Excellency Major General. He's been in charge of different military units and aviation units. Yet he didn't go through the hoops. He didn't apply for permission. He just kind of went over there and did it. The Army later investigated the U.S. Army and found that he hadn't followed the rules, but took no action against him. So it's kind of a toothless law. The response, though, at the Pentagon and at the State Department has been one of silence. They kind of, you know, shrug and don't have much to say about it, except that it's the responsibility of these individuals to make sure they follow all applicable laws. But nobody's really been looking at the big picture to see how this might undermine U.S. foreign policy and certainly send a different message on human rights than the one that the U.S. government says in public.
Craig Whitlock is a Washington Post investigative reporter. Craig, good to talk with you, and thanks for joining us.
You bet. Good talking to you, too.